Sean and I were laughing yesterday. We were thinking it would be better to play the video than to have the two of us sing. That could get us into trouble. Good morning, and I am so happy to be here. I have a long connection with Nona Brooks, and I wanted to come to this church for so long, so I'm so happy to see you here. So about 2,500 years ago, a great wise sage could be seen walking across the king's palace floor, and he was pulling his ox behind him. And this great sage was the head librarian for the king for many, many years. But what he was doing that day is he was walking over to the west to the Hankou Pass, and he was leaving for two reasons. One, he was really fed up with the politicians of the day. I won't say anything else. And he was 81 years old. And so he was retiring. Fortunately for you and me, he walked over to the pass and the gatekeeper knew who he was. He said, "Oh, great master, Lao Tzu, I know who you are. Will you, before you leave and go into forever, will you sit down and write out your thoughts about the natural way of living?" And fortunately, Lao Tzu said yes. He sat down and he wrote the Tao Te Ching with 5,000 Chinese characters, and most of them are no longer in use. And he created an 81-verse book of wisdom. And this is the second most popular book sold on the planet next to the Bible. This is absolutely one of the most profound books I have ever read and incorporated in my life. So about 2 years ago, I have been, for the last 10 years, I've been teaching and studying Taoism. And about 2 years ago, I started to get the nudge that I wanted to write a book about Taoism, including my 12-step background. I have a master's in neurolinguistic programming, which is really the study of the subconscious mind, my science of mind background, and Taoism. And my goal and my intention was to keep the book less than 100 pages, because, like the Tao Te Ching, this is very small. And the reason I wanted to keep it short was because the average American today only reads 26 pages of a 200-page self-help book. Unless there's a lot of sex or money in the book, which there's a little bit of money in here, but not the other. So I wrote this book, and it's called The Trio of Treasures, Embracing the Wisdom of the Tao. Before we get into the treasures, there are three treasures that if we incorporate them into our lives, truly our lives will change. But let's talk about the trio of troubles. So when Sarah walked into my office one day, she looked frazzled and fried. She was just exhausted, and she was like this. And she walks in and she flops on my couch, excuse me, and she says, "Ugh, I just need 30 more minutes a day. If I had 30 more minutes a day, I would be fine." And I looked at her and I said, "Sarah, you don't get 30 more minutes a day. You cannot buy, borrow, beg, or steal 30 more minutes a day, because, like the rest of us, those of us who are living beings, we each have 1,440 minutes in a given day. And let me tell you about those minutes. Once you spend them, and you get to spend them any way you want, but once you spend them, you will never get them back. Time is the most precious thing we have." How many of you have either said or heard someone say in the last 30 days, "Ugh, I just feel crazy busy"? Have you heard about it on the radio or the TV or, yeah? So the reason for that is there's a new epidemic in America today. It darkens the life experience It can destroy relationships, careers, finances, and most importantly, it can destroy health. I had someone in my office yesterday who is on major burnout. The epidemic is known as the crazy busy syndrome. According to USA Today, Americans need 42 hours a day to complete our to-do lists. According to experts, America is now considered by the experts to have the same symptoms as a child with ADD. We're actually moving out of the information age into the age of inattentiveness. Have all of you been hearing about the word mindfulness, a great Buddhist term? It's now in corporate America, and people are turning away from so much information and going into mindfulness. Oh, I could tell you so many stories about that. So anyone have any idea what has influenced us more than, what happened? Why are we so crazy busy in our culture? What is it that's happened? And I got to thinking, I have been so busy lately that I meant to make a phone call on the way down. I came down from Westminster with my beautiful daughter, and I got to thinking, oh my God, I forgot to make this phone call. I have to make this phone call. So if you don't mind, I just got to go find my phone. What did I do with my phone? You know, I lose my glasses and I lose my phone. And wait, what did I do with my phone? Here's my phone. Oh, thank God. I'm always losing my phone. To dial this number, we all took a breath. And that's what we're not doing today. Why? Now, I am not recommending we go back to that. This is much easier to carry, although I carry this all over the country to speak about this, but it's very heavy. So when Steve Jobs died, I read an article, and I wish I had kept it. I searched for it afterwards. And in the article, it said that 200, 300 years from now, historians will look back and say, this was the second most powerful invention for humanity, second only to the fire. Because of this, you and I can be on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Isn't that good news? No. Just to give you a little idea of how important it is, there are approximately 7.7 billion people on the planet. 4.2 billion have a phone, and 3.5 billion have toothbrushes. That's how important it is. Dr. Edward Hallowell, who I've had the privilege of studying under, he wrote a book called Crazy Busy. Hope, optimism, confidence, and enthusiasm, positive emotional energies, make for happiness and success these days, just as they always have done. The difference now is that it is especially difficult to maintain those attitudes because everyone is in such a hurry. The great modern-day philosopher Lily Tomlin once said, "For fast-acting relief, try slowing down." Trio of Trouble number two, judging. A young couple moved into their brand new home in a brand new neighborhood. And on their first morning, they had their first night there. And the first morning, they fixed a nice breakfast. They were sitting in their breakfast nook. And they looked out the window, and they could actually look down and see the neighbor putting her laundry up on the line. And they went, "Well, that's nice, but look how dirty her clothes are." And the next morning, the second morning, they looked out and there was a neighbor and was like, "She's hanging dirty clothes again." And this went on for about a week. Really? Then about a week later, they sat down and lo and behold, the neighbor had clean clothes. She was hanging up clean clothes. And the wife said, "Well, finally, I mean, my God." And the husband tapped her on the hand just very ever so gently. And he said, "The reason our neighbor has clean clothes is I cleaned our windows last night." Judging is as common as leaves growing on trees and as devastating as driving under the influence. To judge is to speak or act harshly about another, and especially oneself. Judging is expressed through name-calling, backstabbing, and gossiping. But the worst of all is a sarcastic comment. Sarcasm is the lowest form of communication. Sarcasm can be traced back to the Greek word sarkazin, which he initially meant to tear flesh like a dog. It can be devastating to a child's worth. Judgers perceive life as good and bad, right and wrong, and black and white. I'd like to show you what happens when... So these are two people that are connected. They could be coworkers, they could be husband and wife, they could be partners, they could be lovers, they could be best friends, they could be children and parents. Somebody, two people that really love each other. And then all of a sudden something happens and there's a snide comment. And then there's a backstabbing or a lack of a betrayal of trust. I'll clean up afterwards. How about gossiping? How about a sarcastic comment? And pretty soon, there's nothing there. This is what has kept me in business for 35 years in my counseling world. People come into our lives to be loved and to love. If we can take on the experience of not judging and make that a spiritual practice, our whole life will change. I come from a very, very sarcastic family. And when I went into ministerial school in 1983, it was one of the things that I took on. Now, I'd love to tell you I'm wearing a halo, but I'm not. But I do work it every day. And every time, when I was in the ministry, I heard somebody say, every time you think a negative thought about someone, immediately think three positives. And so I took that on. In fact, my thoughts were so negative that when I first started school, it's a religious science school, I went to one of my professors and I said, "You know, I'm really worried about the negative thoughts in my head. Do you think that I could make a little agreement with the divine and the divine would only listen to my positive thoughts?" And my professor looked at me and went, "Oh, honey, you have so much to learn." Judgers look to the outside world for the answers and see life in pieces. They think everything could go wrong in a nanosecond. Judgers assume that they know what's right for another person. We never know the full story. So, let's just take a deep breath. And let's begin to look at the trio of treasures, because they're so much more fun to look at. Oops, wait a minute. I forgot to tell you the third one, didn't I? The third trouble is controlling. How many of you have had the experience of where somebody's tried to control you? How many have had the experience where you've tried to control either a situation or someone? How'd that work for you? Yeah. It never, ever gives us a peace of mind and joyous heart. So every time I ask this question, the energy in the room just drops because it's not our nature to try to control. Because what we say when we're trying to control is, I know more about you and what's better for you than God does. And we don't. So we must never assume we know what is best for another. Taoism teaches us to be open-minded and become a curious observer. We'll get into that. Now we can take a deep breath. Now we can look at the Trio of Treasures. 5,000 years ago, the saints and sages and yogis of India used to say that a human being only has two desires. And I so believe that's still true today that my entire work for 35 years has been, this is the foundation of my work. What are the two desires? It's a peaceful mind and a joyful heart. Think about that. We may have secondary desires and tertiary desires, but really, if we have a peaceful mind and a joyful heart, we're doing really well. So the Trio of Treasures, according to Taoism, can literally transform sorrow to joy, sickness into health, poverty into riches, and hate into love. Trio of Treasure number one, simplicity. So speaking of Steve Jobs, he once wrote, did you know he was a Buddhist? Yeah, his products are so simple and beautiful, but this is what he says. That's been one of my mantras, focus and simplicity. Simple can be harder than complex. You have to work hard to get your thinking clean and make it simple. But it's worth it in the end, because once you get there, you can move mountains or invent something that will change the course of humanity. The core teaching of Taoism is harmony. We are asked to live in harmony in order to have a peaceful mind and joyful heart. To live simply means to be in the flow without journeying too far from our center point. It means simply that our center point is between action and non-action. The Sanskrit word for balance is sama, S-A-M-A. It used to be on my license when I lived in Portland. Sama literally means balance, but it means the center point between ease and effort. And isn't it true when we're centered, we can become more of the observer and not get so hooked into the human drama? So if we're easing too much, then to balance out, we need to go be more productive. We need to go into efforting. If we're efforting too much, which is what our culture is struggling with so much, then we need to ease. We need to show up in places like this, learn meditation, calm down, cut our to-dos list by three quarters. We are asked to, whatever is taking us out of harmony, we are asked to go back further into it. The voice of simplicity asks not, how much do I get and do, but what brings me joy? Trio of Treasure number two, kindness. And when I started out, when I wrote my book, I wanted to do more than just focus on the spiritual aspects of kindness. I think we all know what that means. I wanted to find out what was going on in the science world. Oh my gosh, there is so much statistical information now of what happens when we are kind. Leo Biscaglia, who was the first professor, I believe he was at UCLA, I could be wrong on that, but he went to, in the 50s and 60s and 70s, he went to the powers at hand and said, I want to teach a class on love and kindness. And the powers said to him, well, that's ridiculous. No one is going to come. And he filled auditoriums with thousands and thousands of people. because people want to know how to be kind. He writes, "Too often, we underestimate the power of a touch, a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or the smallest act of caring, all of which have the potential to turn a life around." Human beings do two things all day long, and these two things bind us as a human race. The first thing we do is we breathe. The second thing we do is we think. And this is pure divine science, it's pure religious science, it's pure unity. We think. And why would we care what we think? It's because our thoughts create our realities and determine the quality of our lives. According to science, we think approximately 70,000 thoughts in a given day. This comes out of Psychology Today. Or this next statistic comes out of Psychology Today. We think 70,000 thoughts in a 1,440-minute period. And according to the research, this comes out, like I said, of Psychology Today, 80% of our 70,000 thoughts are negative. Deepak Chopra says, that's interesting, but what's even more interesting is 80% of those 80% of negative thoughts are the same ones that we had yesterday. And we wonder why our lives are not changing. Our thoughts create our reality. And I know you teach a lot of classes about this, and it's the basis of divine science. When we are thinking fear-based thoughts, we cannot be kind. Thoughts are things. Lao Tzu spoke to this 2,500 years ago. How many of you have ever been to a place in Seattle, Washington called Pike Place Market? Okay, cool. If you haven't been, you might want to put it on your bucket list. Yeah, you put a smile on your face, doesn't it? It's this huge open-air market, huge. And vendors are yelling. There's so much aliveness there. Music is loud. Smells are exotic. Hundreds of customers are milling around from all over the world. And it looks out over the San Juan Islands. And I was there one morning. I lived in Seattle for quite a while. And I was there at the market because I was having breakfast with my father. And at the time, he had become a Skid Row bum. By his own admission. He would call himself, he used to call people on the street when I was a little girl, he'd go, oh, those Skid Row bums, and then he actually started living on the streets of Seattle. And the conversation that day had been very shallow, and I felt particularly sad. So we said our goodbyes. He went off to his, he had a little doorway that he would stay in. And I thought, you know, as long as I'm here, I might as well go get some salmon, because it's a good place to get salmon. So I went upstairs and I walked into the fish area, and there were fishmongers lined up in the hallway, and they were standing behind their counters, tall counters. And I looked all the way over, and at the very end, there was a man standing behind his fish counter, and I remember saying, wow, he looks like Santa Claus's first cousin. He had white hair, a white beard, he was kind of roly-poly. So I went up to him, and I said to him, I would like a half a pound of king salmon, please. And he looked at me, and he said, young lady, I don't have any. And I have to tell you, in that moment, there was nothing in me that could take another disappointment in my life. So I looked at him, and tears just started streaming down my face. And he looked at me, and he went, hey, Fred, fly me a king. We have a live one here. And all of a sudden, this king salmon comes flying over all of our heads. My sage catches it, wraps it up, comes around his counter, and he looks at me very respectfully, holding the king salmon in his left hand, and he puts out his right arm, and he said, young lady, looks like you need a shoulder to cry on. I'm telling you, that was it. I put my head on his shoulder, and I started sobbing like I have never sobbed before. I just had breakfast with my father, and he's living on the streets, and I'm about to lose my home, and my dog is dying, and my husband has a girlfriend, and I have two little boys, and I don't know what's going to happen, and the worst is that I'm in my first year of ministerial school, and I don't even think I believe in God. He just held me, and I sobbed, and I sobbed. So in Taoism, there's a belief that no storm lasts forever. Think about this. Not even nature can keep a storm going forever. So as my internal storm started to calm down, I step back and I'm just looking at him, and he looks at me and he says, "Young lady, you listen to me. I get you're going through a hot spot in your life. But I want you to know something. You're strong, you're powerful, you'll get through this, but you pay attention to what I'm about to say." Actually, he's holding the king salmon here. "Nothing is bigger than God. No human experience is bigger than God. Now you take this salmon home and you go home and love your two sons like you've never loved them before." I did. I picked the kids up. It was a cold, typical Seattle spring day, raining. I built a fire, made some hot chocolate. We sat in the living room floor. The dog was plastered against us, and we played Legos all afternoon, and we all fell asleep curled up around each other. We had king salmon pizza that night. And about a week later, I went back. And I walked into the hall, and he saw me, and I saw him, and he comes around, and we just give each other a great big hug. And I said to him, "Thank you so much. Thank you. So I'm here to pay you for the salmon. And I also noticed on your white chef jacket that I left a big blob of mascara. And I have some chocolate for you." He said, "Well, young lady, this is how we're going to handle this one. You're not going to pay for the salmon. The shirt, the chef jacket's already cleaned up, the shirt's already cleaned, but I will take those chocolates." I only saw him twice. I never knew his name. But all these years, he has lived so deeply in my heart, and he truly changed the course of my character. Lao Tzu says, "Kindness in words creates confidence. Kindness in thinking creates profoundness. Kindness in giving creates love." Trio of treasure number three, allowing. What are we asked to allow? First of all, we allow this great, grand, beautiful, wise universe of ours to express through us. We each have our own set of talents and skills. Thank God we are each individualized expressions of the divine. And when we get that, I have come to believe that the spiritual path is the path of authenticity. We are asked to be authentic. With the Tao, there's no need to resolve the various contradictions in life. We just get to observe them and enjoy them and live in harmony as we watch the magic of the universe, as we allow the magic of the universe to heal whatever needs to be healed. We are asked to know what we want. What do you want in life? I was working with a client the other day, and I said, "You know, I have come to fully realize, this is very obvious when you look at me, that I have more yesterdays than tomorrows. What do I want to accomplish between now and here? What do I want to experience? What do I want to give?" The Tao asks us, to be fully and completely in the trust and allow that wisdom to come through us. We are asked to know what we want and then to trust it all to unfold. How many of you can actually look back on negative experiences and go, it's one of the best things that ever happened to me? I'm so grateful for that, yeah. When we allow ourselves to be in the Tao, in the now, we let go of our worries and we let go of any guilt. Lao Tzu says that if you're worried about something, you're in the future. If you feel guilty about something, you're in the past. You cannot feel guilty about the future. Although I often thought my mother could. She was pretty good at that. Lao Tzu says, when you are content to simply be yourself and don't compare and compete, everybody will respect you. So there are 81 verses in the Tao Te Ching, and over the 2,500 years since this was written, thousands and thousands of people who call themselves scholars, sages, wisdom teachers, ministers, have tried to figure out exactly what Lao Tzu was saying. But every person who has read the Tao Te Ching says that there's one verse that they all agree on, and that is the 25th verse. Lao Tzu writes, great is boundless. Boundless is eternally flowing, ever flowing. It is constantly returning. To know the way, understand the great within yourself. Could you just turn to the person next to you just for a second? I'm going to close in a minute and just say, you're great. You're just great. You're great. And then turn to the people around you and go, I'm great. And then just for giggles, let's just all say together, we're great. We are great. Thank you for inviting me here today. I love hanging out with you and being in the Tao. Thanks so much for coming. Thanks.